Thank you, worship team. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to see everybody this morning. Welcome to our service. If you're here for the first time, I especially just want to welcome you as our guest. We're glad that you're worshiping with us this morning. There's a card, a guest card in the pocket of the seat in front of you. If you'd like to fill it out and drop it in the one of the offering boxes in the back, we'd love to be able to connect a name with the face. Also, always use that card if you're a regular around here for any kind of prayer request you have or communications you need. To share with us, so utilize those. It's always interesting. I want to thank our text this morning. You know, they go unseen most services because they're in the back, but you really notice them when 16 of your regular leaders on Sunday mornings decide to go on a cruise all on the same weekend together, and they're somewhere between here and Bermuda, right? And a lot of them were technicians that would have normally been serving this morning, and so we had folks jump in on the early service and do double duty on the board and on the computer, and Matthew wasn't on this morning, but he jumped in and bailed Carter out, who was going to have to jump back and forth, and he was up for the challenge, I'm sure. He's a Boy Scout, so... But anyway, thanks to our techs who serve week in and week out, because you wouldn't be able to hear us or see stuff without them, so I'm super appreciative of them. Before we jump into the message this morning, I just want to remind you, we launched a new app last week, and how many downloaded it? Raise your hand. Lots of people, yeah. I think we've had maybe close to 50, something like that, who've downloaded the app already, so check it out. I kind of did a live walkthrough, I hooked my phone up to the TVs last week. I'm not going to do that this week, but just want to highlight some of the things and just remind you that when we rolled out our website a couple of months ago, I said to you, one, the main thing, the people we had in mind or the person we had in mind the most with our website when we designed it was the person on the outside who's checking us out from the outside. So people who are new to the area looking for a church, or someone who's been here for a long time but just deciding they want to connect with a church or whatever. So we kind of created that with them in mind because they're the ones that use the website the most. When we created the app, though, we thought about what do folks that are here need, what's some tools and resources that we can give. So there's a giving component on the app. It's really easy to give financially through that. If that's something you do or want to do, check that out. But one of the things I love the most is the homepage. And the homepage, we created a section on that called Sunday Mornings. And so we said, what do people need when they're here? So when you're where you are right now, what would be helpful? And so we created a few things for Sunday mornings. We have a section there you can click, and it'll take you to the song list that we're singing and we have sung in the past few weeks. So like if you're thinking, I want to download that song later. I really love that song. I've not heard it before. I want to remember what it is. They're all on our website. They're all on the app, so you can get them there. There's also an online Bible, really quick links there to some online Bibles, so you can use those while we're studying and teaching together. And then there's the sermon notes, and we get a lot of feedback through the year on sermon notes, and one of the things we hear the most from people is we wish we had more space in the bulletin. It's almost like I think, you know, we should just hand out notepads. On the way in is the impression I get from people, and we can't do that, and we want to minimize the amount of paper we're using, so we feel like we've kind of maximized that space. But the great thing about the app is you've got an infinite amount of space on there because it's digital, and there's space on there at the very bottom for you just to type in on your mobile device as many notes as you want to. There's fill-ins. If you look at the app, there's a little black boxes. Any of those little black boxes is a fill-in that's in the printed notes. You just tap that, your keyboard will pop up, and you can fill it in yourself. You can save those. You can come back to them. You can share them. You can text them to yourself and bookmark them and all that good stuff. So check out the app. The last thing I want just to make you aware of is the notifications. It's on the very end of the app, under More, I think it is. Notifications, and check that out, because by default you are automatically signed up for all of the different types of notifications that we might be able to send out, and you may not want all of them or need all of them. So we've got kids ministry, student ministry, small groups, events, inclement weather, cancellations, things like that. So go in, uncheck anything you don't want to get notifications off. If you don't want any notifications, that's fine with us. We promise not to bombard you with lots of little pop-ups and messages and those little red dots that show up on your app telling you need to read something. We will use that sparingly and only when we really, really feel like it's essential and necessary. So check it out. If you have any questions about it or need help, or if you have suggestions about how we might improve it, or an idea of what we might add to it, we would love to hear those suggestions. Sound good? Super. Grab your notes. We are starting a brand new series that I'm really excited about called The Tanya Project. And we're going to be in this for the next 4 weeks. So the entire month of October, we're going to be focusing on I'm going to introduce you to this morning. And this is more than just a sermon series. This is what we call a generosity initiative. And we've done a few of these through the years as a church. And I'll explain all of that as we go through it. But as many of you know, we have a partnership, and we've had an intentional partnership with a school in Kenya called the Tanya Center for a couple of years. Our history goes back a lot longer, and I'll tell you all about that next week. But the way that the story of the Tanya Center, their story, the way it intersects with our church's story is just an incredible, incredible thing. It's really a story of God at work doing things that I believe only God could do and only God could arrange. So I hope you'll be back next week as I tell you a little bit more about what all of that is about. And we're going to be telling the story over the next few weeks. And I just want to, today though, I just want to introduce you to the Tanya Center and the work that they're doing and sort of what we're doing in terms of this generosity initiative and what all of that means. And a lot of you have heard some of this stuff because we've talked about them a lot. We had Beth Oaks, who's one of our members, was a missionary for 2 years at the Tanya Center and taught there for 2 years. And a lot of you supported her financially while she was there. So you've heard a lot of this. But I believe that this partnership with the Tanya Center is going to be one of the most significant partnerships our church has over the next few years. And I think we're going to see God do some incredible things through that partnership. And so I think all of us ought to be able to tell the story of Tanya as we have the opportunity over the next few years as we continue our partnership. So here's what they are. Tanya's a school in Kenya outside of Nairobi. They exist primarily for children with disabilities and special needs. It's a residential school, which means the children live there during the school terms. A lot of them don't have families to go home to, so they live there pretty much year-round. And this is how Tanya describes its mission right here. The mission of Tanya is to provide children with disabilities, orphans, and other vulnerable children with education to equip them with self-reliance skills so they can be independent in the future. And that's an incredible, incredible mission. We've got a picture here of some of the kids of Tanya, a group picture. So just a little bit about them. Tanya serves children that many times are forgotten. They serve children that some in their communities think can't be educated, even though they can. And they serve children that a lot of people have given up on and just don't believe in anymore. They have children there at Tanya that have been found living on the streets. They have children who have been victims of abuse. They have some kids who are just flat-out orphans, and both of their parents or one of their parents is deceased. Some of the girls at Tanya have been rescued from child marriages. Some of them have been rescued from communities that practice female genital mutilation, which is a horrible, horrible problem in our world. So many, if not most, of the 150 to 165 kids that are at Tanya at any given time, most of them are vulnerable children. We would consider them vulnerable children. Our church has a heart and has for a long, long time for the most vulnerable. Tanya was founded by and is currently directed by a couple by the name of Jennifer and Joseph. Jennifer and Joseph Kigunda, we'll talk about them a lot. You met them a couple of months ago if you were here when they were in town. They were in town visiting. We had them here. They were on stage telling a lot of their story while they were here. And they have an incredible story of how they started Tanya and how they got into the education side of educating special needs kids. And I'll be telling you about that next week. So Tanya, they educate children at Tanya that in some cases others can't or just won't even try to educate. They help to rehabilitate children that have experienced some kind of trauma in their lives. And at any given time, like I said, they have 150 to 165 kids living there. I was talking to Joseph Kigunda, and I was asking him, just kind of in preparation for this series and for this initiative, just to tell me, Joseph, under perfect conditions, if you had all of the resources that you needed, which they never do, right? None of us ever have all the resources that we think we need or actually do need. But I said, if you had all the resources that you need, how many people would it take to be fully staffed at Tanya, to do it super, super well, the best you can do, how many people would that be? We've got a picture of some of their staff, some of their teachers. This is actually in one of the classrooms, and they're having either a training session or a planning meeting with the staff, and the other side of the room is the rest of them. But Joseph said it's around 35 people is what a full staff at Tanya would look like. They don't typically have that many people, either because they don't have the resources or because people are transitioning in and out constantly through there. But that's about what it takes. It's about 35 people, and they have different positions. I won't list all of them, but they have a head teacher who kind of oversees all the other teachers. They have a teacher that oversees the nursery and the babies. And then they have a teacher that oversees preschool. And then Tanya primarily teaches classes 1 through 8. So think elementary, middle school for us here in the U.S. And so they have a teacher for each of those classes, or they need a teacher for each of those classes. They have a teacher that manages the special ed needs of the school. They have two what they call pre-vocational teachers, because a lot of the kids at Tanya won't be able to go on to high school and won't be able to go on to university. Some of them do, and we'll be sharing some of the impact stories of some of the adults that went to Tanya and where they are today over the next few weeks. But they have two teachers that focus on vocational skills and teaching those vocational skills. They have an accountant to manage things for them. They have try to keep as many as 3 social workers just to deal with a lot of the social aspects of what it takes to lead a school like Tanya. They need 3 cooks. That's a lot of people to cook for, isn't it? I don't know how 3 cooks do that, but they do. They have maintenance personnel, groundskeepers, and we'll talk about why they need groundskeepers in just a minute. They try to have 4 house parents. The kids live in the dorms, and that's a need for that Tanya has. They need another dorm. They're all in one dorm, and Joseph, Jennifer both said when they were here, you know, we want to expand that into the future. So it takes a lot to run Tanya. I also asked Joseph just about the cost, and we've been talking to them really for the last 2 years, and as we've got to know them better, and they trust us more, and we've developed that relationship with them. They've opened up a little bit more about their expenses and their financial situations and where they are and what they need and all that. And so I asked them about their costs, and what we've discovered is Tanya has 3 major expenses. They have a lot of expenses, but they have 3 things that are what they consider the most important, the priorities, the major expenses. And first, and these are in no particular order, are the teachers that I just talked to you about. Joseph said that the average pay for those 35 teachers is around $150 a month. I'll let that sit in for just a minute for you. $150 a month, that's average. So that means some are making a little bit more, some are making a little bit less. And when you multiply that over, if they were able to have a full-time staff, that's $63,000 a year that it takes just for staffing and for teachers and administrators. And this is an area where, as we've got to know them, while Beth was there serving for 2 years, we had a good insight into this. This is an area where they really, really struggle in terms of paying their teachers and their staff, and it creates some real problems. It creates morale problems. It creates momentum problems. It's difficult to attract good people and keep good people, and so it's an issue for them that's ongoing. Another major cost is food for the children and the staff. I mean, 150 to 165 kids plus some of the staff live on campus and they work on campus. And so they grow a lot of their own food. They do a lot of sustainable projects and things like that. Here are a few pictures. These will just scroll of how they manage their food and some of the crops they grow. This is a greenhouse they have. Notice the irrigation system that they have there and here. In this particular garden, they're constantly in a drought situation in Kenya, so irrigating is something that just is a requirement, or they wouldn't be able to do this at all. They also have some livestock. They have some cows and some pigs and other things, and then they've got 2 of these ponds where they have tilapias in them, and so they use those for food. They also are able to sell those in town and generate some resources for some other expenses as well. One of the things that Joseph and Jennifer told us when they were here, and we'd heard it when we were visiting there too, is no matter how much they've struggled through the years with their finances, they've made sure the kids have never gone without food. And that has come many times with some incredible sacrifice personally on their part, where they've spent their own money, their own savings, their own retirement sold some of their own property to make sure that that happened. So incredible sacrifice on their part. And then the third biggest cost for Tanya is something we probably wouldn't think about, but it's electricity. Electricity is incredibly, incredibly expensive in Kenya. And the main reason that it's so expensive for Tanya, it's an issue for them, is like I said, they have to irrigate their crops, which means this huge water pump at their well is running almost all of the time to keep the crops irrigated and to keep those two ponds filled up with water. It's kind of a catch-22 for them because they need to grow crops to feed the kids because the kids need to eat, but they need water to get the crops irrigated because they're in a drought. And so it's just a constant battle for them. It's a cycle. In fact, here's what their electric cost looks like. They sent these to us. They have 2 meters on campus. 1 meter feeds the entire campus, all of the buildings, the lights, the computer labs, the laundry, all of that. The other meter only feeds the pump that pumps the water. So for the buildings on campus, it's about $6,000 a year is what they pay in electrical costs. Here's what it costs just for the water pump. More than double that, $13,000 a year. That's more than $1,000 a month just to keep that water system going. So where do we come in on this? Or maybe the bigger question, we've got a partnership with them. What are we doing about this right now as a partner with the Tanya Center? Well, here's what we're doing and here's what we want to do. First, what we're doing, the last 2 years when we started this partnership with them, when we took it to the next level, we began to budget out of our general operating expenses, the budget that covers our own electricity, the budget that covers our groundskeeping, the budget that covers our personnel costs and the cost of ministry like kids' ministry supplies and sending our students to camp and retreats and all of that stuff. We began to budget $5,000 a year to go to the Tanya Center. And each year we've sent it to them basically as a lump sum at the beginning of the year. And the first year, all of those funds, that $5,000, went to pay their teachers because, like I said, Beth was teaching there at the time. And so we got in connection with her and we said, how should we use this? And she said, a big problem here is morale with the staff because they're behind on their pay. And so if you could designate it to that, it would make a big difference. So we sent it, they were able to catch up and they were able to pay ahead their staff and their teachers, and they were able to get their teachers some much needed continuing education. And it made a huge, huge difference at the time in terms of just the morale on campus and the teachers' willingness to step in and go above and beyond. Later that year, while Beth was still there, we found out that I think through her, but maybe through Joseph, but they'd had their electricity cut off. They'd gotten behind on that huge electric bill, and so the power company had actually come and turned the electricity off, which meant there's no lights in the classroom, and it's hard to teach in classrooms where there's no lights. The computer lab wasn't able to be up and running. There was no food or water for cooking. It was difficult to get water for cooking and bathing and all that. No internet. That's the one that killed Beth the most while she was there. And then no water for irrigation. So we stepped in as a church. We have a fund in our budget. I can't even remember what we call it anymore, but it's basically unanticipated opportunities, basically. And it's because we plan our budget in detail, but we realize there are some things that are going to pop up through the year that we can't anticipate, that God's going to put in our face or in our laps where we can step in and be a part of it. And so we felt like this was one of those things. We found the $4,000 to send them to get their electric bill squared away and get the power back up and running. And then this year in January, we sent $5,000. Joseph said we're excited. We're going to use that for staff salaries and all of that. And then he came back to us a few weeks later and he said we really wanted to do that. But the power company was knocking on our door again. They were at the pole and they were about to cut it off, and we had to use it all to pay our electric bill. So it just seemed like an ongoing problem, and this cycle that they just couldn't break and couldn't get out of and still haven't in a lot of ways. So Joseph and I, we began to talk about what are some solutions here. We began to pray about it here, and they were praying about it. And this is the solution that they came up with. This wasn't our idea at all. This was Joseph and his team, their solution. But the solution was, let's get the water pump off of the grid and let's get it on a solar system. And so he came to us and he said, can you help us? Can your church help us do this? And so I said, we will begin to talk about it. We'll begin to pray about it. And I said, I need you to do two things in the meantime. First, I need you to get a bid from a reputable company that can do this work. And then the second thing I need you to do is I need you to go and find another organization similar to Tanya that's done this and see if it works and see if it's still working and see what it takes to make it work. So he did all of that. He went and visited a school, he and his team, that wasn't too far away. Very similar, it's a residential school. I don't think it's a special needs school, but they have students there almost year-round. And they had the same exact story. We'd get behind on our bill because we're pumping water, because we're growing crops and we're irrigating stuff. And then the power company would turn it off, and then we didn't have lights for a week or two till we could scrape up the money and get it all back on. And they said, but when we put in this system, not only does it work, but it's gotten rid of that cycle. And we're able to put those resources into our teachers and into our campus and into other things. And it's made all the difference in the world. So they did that, and then they got a bid for the cost of installing the solar system. Again, just on the water pump, not the rest of the campus. That's down the road for them at some point. But it's $20,000 US dollars. That's not Kenyan shillings. That would be nothing if it was Kenyan shillings. It's about 2 million Kenyan shillings, about 20,000 US dollars. So when they came to us and they came with all that information, I asked our staff to begin praying about it. So we put it at the top of our list in terms of praying for our church and partnerships and kind of where we're going. I asked our alignment team, which is our core team, our board of directors, I asked them to begin to think about and to pray about this. I asked a few folks in our church that I knew had a deeper connection to Tanya to start praying about this. And a few months ago, our alignment team, after talking about this over several meetings, they decided this was something that God was calling our church to be a part of. And so here's what we want to do, and this is where the generosity initiative part of this this series comes in. We want to raise above and beyond what we normally raise, above and beyond our normal operating expenses as a church. We want to raise over the next 6 months $50,000 to go to Tanya. And we want to help them with $20,000 to pay for that solar system, to break this cycle that they're in financially so they can put their resources into their staff. And then we also want to set them up for success, and we want to take the other $30,000 and give that to them over a period of time to help with their ongoing staff and teacher costs. Over a period of 6 months, we hope to collect that. Now, we're doing this because we believe in the work that they're doing at Tanya. That's why we have a partnership with them. And we believe that it's so important what they're doing that we want our church to have a significant stake in that work as well. And I love this goal when our team decided on increasing it from a $20,000 goal just for the solar to a $50,000 goal. I love this goal for a couple of reasons. One, it's small enough that we can do this as a church. It's not going to be easy, but we can manage this. But it's big enough that it's going to take us all participating in some way, even if in a small way, to get there. And here's what I want you to hear. No matter how old you are, no matter how young you are, no matter how long you've been in our church or how new you are to our church, you are a part of what God is doing here. And you are a part of the work and the ministries and the mission of Fairfax Circle Church. And I believe that we are moving into a season in our church where God is going to do some really, really neat stuff. And I believe that this is part of that. And I believe we're moving into some interesting times in our church. You know, the ancient Greeks had two words to talk about time. The first word they use is the word chronos. And the chronos, we get chronology from it. So think, you know, clock, right? The second word is a really neat word and a really curious word. It's the word kairos. And it literally means the right or an opportune time. And I love that word because it was used to describe a moment in time in which something really, really special happens. And we've been, as a church, we've been in these kairos moments. We've been in these kairos seasons in our church where we saw some really, really special stuff happen because of God working. And I believe we are in one of those times. We're moving into one of those kairos moments again. But here's the deal about these moments, about these kairos seasons. Kairos moments, kairos seasons, they require some level of sacrifice in order to get there. And we don't always live in these moments. We don't always live in these seasons. But when they do come along, they require a level of sacrifice on our part. And let me give you an example from Scripture of someone's life who did this, who lived throughout these kairos moments. It's the story of Abraham, and we're going to talk about Abraham a lot throughout this series. But Abraham was called by God to leave his home, to leave everything that he ever knew, and to go to a land that he didn't know anything about, so that God could use him to bless the nations of the world and ultimately to save the world. And Abraham had this, he had this unique opportunity, this window of opportunity, where he had to be obedient to the calling of God on his life. And for Abraham, it required a lot of sacrifice. We're going to talk about that sacrifice in a couple of weeks. But here's the deal. This is a season. This is, I believe, a unique opportunity to be part of something that God is doing that's bigger than us. And during these carry-on seasons, God will call us to a level of sacrifice that maybe we're not used to and maybe we're uncomfortable with. And so this leads me to the number one goal of this series, and the number one goal really of this generosity initiative that we're doing. And it's not to reach $50,000 in giving and commitments. That's not the number one goal. The number one goal is that we would be spiritually transformed. It would be our spiritual transformation. That whether or not we hit $50,000 as a part of this goal and this project, that's important, but that's not the most important thing to me. What's most important is our spiritual transformation in the process, along the way, and on the journey. Here's something that C.S. Lewis said. C.S. Lewis said, "Wealth has a way of knitting a man's heart to this world." Wealth has a way of knitting a man's heart to this world. And I think what he meant by that was our finances, if we're not careful, our finances have a way of pulling us closer to the world and further away from the things of God. And so this is not about raising enough money. It's about our hearts. It's about our spiritual transformation. And I'm just saying that if we want to be a part of what God is doing in this world, and specifically if we want to be a part of what God is doing in the lives of the children of Tanya, then the reality is we're going to have to examine our hearts along the way in ways that maybe we've never considered, and in ways that maybe make us a little uncomfortable. And we're going to need to ask some questions like, you know, where's my security? And where's my security, and where does it lie, and what does it lie in? And what if anything is holding back my spiritual growth as it relates to my generosity? And Jesus said it this way, and his disciple Matthew was there and heard him, and so he captured his words for us today. But here's what Matthew tells us that Jesus said. He said, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And from that statement, I just want to give you one takeaway this morning, just one thing to take with you and to think about this morning. And here it is. It's this, that my heart follows my money. My heart follows my money. If we want to know where our heart lies, then all we have to do is follow the trail of our finances, because our heart follows our money. They will be, our finances is the biggest indicator of where our hearts lie. My heart follows my money. Now, there is absolutely nothing wrong with having money. We're going to talk about that a lot over the next few weeks. There's nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong with having money. In fact, God has blessed you with that. And I hope we all see that God has blessed us. And there's nothing wrong with having wealth and finances and money. I wish there were more followers of Jesus who were wealthy, who were investing what God has blessed them with into kingdom work. And I hope we all realize that God has blessed us with that. But the way that we determine where our heart is, Jesus says, is where the trail of our money leads. And so here's what I just want to ask you to do this week as we start on this journey. First, I want to ask you to begin praying for the children of Tanya and for the leaders of Tanya. Because I've been there. I've seen it firsthand. Some of you have been there. Some of you have been there more than once. And you've seen it too. It's an incredible place. It's an incredible place where children are loved, where children are cared for, and where children, where a lot of people don't believe in them anymore, they are believed in at Tanya. And their value is recognized at Tanya. And the people who do that at Tanya day in and day out, They desperately need our prayers, and the kids need our prayer. And the kids who have families, those families, as they raise those kids with special needs, they need our prayers too. And so pray, make a prayer commitment to pray for the children and the staff and the leaders of Tanya. And then something else I want to ask you to do is just start thinking about what Jesus said. When he said, where your treasure is, there's your heart is. And where is your heart as it relates to your generosity, as it relates to your finances? And I'm not asking you to do anything that I'm not doing. I'm not asking you to do anything that our staff and our leaders aren't doing. I believe we all have room for spiritual transformation in this area of our lives. And then finally, I want to encourage you to be here for the next 3 weeks and the next three Sundays as we just go through this series together and talk about what we're doing as a church and what that means for each one of us. Because each week, I'm going to be walking you through a process of what, if anything, God may be calling you to contribute to this generosity initiative that we're doing. And notice I said, what, if anything? And why did I say that? Because listen, this is really, really careful because this is important. I am not a fundraiser. I've told you this before. That is not my role. It's not in my wheelhouse. It's not what I do. I'm not a fundraiser. I am your pastor. And my primary responsibility as your pastor is to teach you and to lead you to learn to hear the voice of God. And I will never say, this is what you should give, or this is what you should do, or this is where you should go. But what I will do, and my commitment to you as I lead you, is I will teach you to listen to the voice of God. And not just through this project, and not just through this process, but beyond this and everything that we do. I want us all to be walk so closely with Christ that we hear his voice, that we know his voice, and that we obey his voice. And when we do that, when we hear the voice of God, and when we obey the voice of God, incredible things happen. That's when some really, really neat stuff starts to happen in the life of a church and in the life of Jesus followers. And so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about what God is going to do in all of our lives and spiritual transformation over the next few weeks. Next week, as you come in, along with your bulletin, we're going to give you a little card, just a little postcard-sized card. On one side of it is going to be a giving guide. It's a simple giving guide, and it's just a tool for you to use just to kind of see where you might fall in this if you feel like God is leading you to participate in the financial initiative side of this series that we're doing. And so take a look at that. On the back side of it is a commitment form. And there's all kinds of levels of commitment, from just committing to praying through this over the next 6 months to actually making a financial commitment. And we'll be collecting those throughout this next few weeks. And again, it's about the journey that we're on together as a church family, as we move forward in what God is doing here. And it's about our spiritual transformation as we learn to trust God and to follow God in new ways. And just a heads up on next week, because I know when we talk about finances and when we talk about money and generosity and giving and all of that, I know there are some natural fears that just pop up in our minds, right? I mean, it happens to all of us. It happens to me. I'm sure it happens to you. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk next week about the fear that can grip us when it comes to our finances. And you know, what if I do this and then I need this? Or what if I do this and then this happens and I'm not prepared for it? And all of that. God has some things to say to us through Scripture about that. And then let me say this in closing, and we'll wrap up. I believe everyone in this room wants to be generous with their finances. I really do. In fact, you already are generous in your giving. You are an incredibly, incredibly generous church. The things that this church does, just on a financial level, at the size we are, not many churches our size are able to pull off what we do, but it's because of your ongoing generosity as a church. But I believe that all of us want to be even more generous than we are, and it's not greed that keeps us from doing that. I don't believe it's greed that keeps us from being generous. I think it's fear. I think it's just fear. You know, if I'm more generous, what if down the road something happens and I don't have enough and I've got these things I've got to take care of? It's a very real fear. It's a fair fear. It's a legitimate fear. Next week, we'll be addressing that fear and what we can do about it. So I want to encourage you to come back. In the meantime, be praying for the children of Tanya, for Joseph and Jennifer and all the great leaders there. Let's go to God in prayer. God, I thank you for, first of all, just for the Tanya Center and just what it is in the middle there of that little area outside of Nairobi, where it's just a haven for kids that a lot of people have given up on, and a lot of kids have lost their parents or been on the streets or been through some kind of trauma in their lives. I thank you that they not only educate children there, but they help them to move past the physical things and the emotional things, that they do more than just teach them things that they're going to need to know. I thank you for Joseph and Jennifer, and I thank you for the vision that you gave them years ago for this. I thank you for just the incredible way that you brought them into the special needs education field years and years and years ago. I thank you for the sacrifice, the personal sacrifice that they've made along the way and continue to make. I thank you for all the people that teach there and continue to teach there on an ongoing basis, and then those who are able to come and go and contribute when they can. And I just pray for their resources, whether it's financial resources or food resources or just people, staffing resources. I just pray that you would continue to provide them everything that they need. And then God, I pray for our church as we step into this Kairos moment. I do pray that it would be a very special moment in the life of this church as we see you do some incredible things through us. And God, I just thank you and praise you in advance for the spiritual transformation in our own lives as we walk through this. In Christ's name I pray. Amen. We're going to stand and sing our song response in just a second, and then we're going to share communion this morning. And I just want to invite you to communion. If you're here, you're a follower of Jesus, regardless of whether you're a member of our church or grew up in this particular denomination or another denomination, we invite you to this table this morning. You know, I was thinking about communion a lot this week, more so than normal. I knew it was coming up, and I was just thinking about the Tanya Center and a lot of the difficulties and struggles that they have and things going on there, and then certainly all of the stuff that we see going on in our own country in terms of unity and politics and all that stuff that I know is just weighing a lot of us down and just feel like it brings us down. And I just thought, you know, communion, Jesus not only gave us that to remind us of what he did and the sacrifice that he made, but he gave it to us to remind us that he's still here and he's still at work and he's still a very real presence in this world, even when this world is as chaotic as ours is. And that presence is lived out through you and me as we are his followers in this world. So my prayer is just that we would do that well and that we would remember that's part of our calling as we come to communion this morning. Here's what Paul tells us. He gives us a little bit of instructions about how we should approach communion as believers. He says this in 1 Corinthians 11. He says, "For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, he took some bread. And when he'd given thanks, he broke it, and he said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Eat this in remembrance of me.' And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me.'" And then Paul says, "A person ought to examine themselves before they eat of the bread or drink of the cup." So as we stand and sing our song response, you take that opportunity, like Paul says, just to examine your life and where you are. And is there anything you need to give over to God this morning? Let's stand and sing.